You are listening to episode 114 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, a show to be grateful for.
Episode 114 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December the 1st, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my turkey of a brother, James Furlough.
Hey, you know the rules. After the holiday, it's done. We don't mention it. What's with that?
No. It's not true.
Oh, then I'm confused.
I realize these are squishy rules, but this one's all right because it was so close in proximity and we didn't mention it last week. You know, it's kind of the tweener weekend, really. Exactly. I mean, it's December 1st and we're not quite into the Christmas run up yet, but we're definitely, you know, we're through Black Friday.
Okay.
But yeah.
Are you getting ready for some good Cyber Monday deals?
Home, baby. No. I'm not. That's because, statistically, the best deals come closest to Christmas, which is why I always put off my shopping until...
Best deals actually come just after Christmas.
It's true, which is why I always put off my shopping until after Christmas. Well, yeah, but they say that the deals get the pre-Christmas deals actually get best like the week before Christmas, and then as the stores try to get that, you know, squeeze that last couple of cents out of you, and then
assuming you can find what you're looking for.
Yeah, well, you know, you're getting presents for other people. Okay. What do I care what it is? I find, you know.
Oh, that's funny. That's good. That's good. How was your trip? Did you accomplish what you set out to accomplish?
Well, no.
Right. Good talk.
Yeah, it was less fun than I wanted it to be because of that in that capacity. But I did get to spend a week in England, which is cool, pretty cool. And
there's that. Yeah, for sure.
I got to spend the night in Toronto because my...
That was unplanned, right?
Yes, very unplanned. I was supposed to be a hour and a half layover in Montreal was all I was supposed to... All the time I was supposed to spend in Canada. Barely enough time to get off my plane, take a picture, post it to Instagram, and get on the next plane. And then did not turn out that way because I missed my connection. Because of mechanical issues with another plane.
Of course.
And yeah, and it's sort of, we saved that plane in that we took a bunch of their passengers, but we had to wait for them to get back to the airport. And so it just was one of those nights, and I got to, and like I said, I got to spend the night in Toronto, which is actually kind of fun, but I had to get very, very, very little sleep, and then doubled the amount of sleep I got this weekend on accident about an hour ago by sleeping for 4 hours. So since Friday night, I'm working on just about 10 hours of sleep, which is exciting. But I'm feeling pretty good. Ready to rock and roll?
So the show is either going to end really early because it's horrible, or it will be awesome.
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, you're going to have to give me 1 second. I have to blow my nose all of a sudden.
Blow away. I will. I'll kick us off. So we are. What are we? We're the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. We do the opera that is corporate.
Okay, I'll do this for you. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, thank you. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure that he has to throw out our way.
This is the first year we're going to put up Christmas lights.
Yes.
We're outside.
That's
awesome.
Because
we now own a house. So we're like, we should do that. And, you know, we got home last night around midnight. And I couldn't help but notice how dark it was on our block. I was like, this is just wrong. So we're going to lead the way, some Christmas cheer, and we're going to put up some lights. It's going to be awesome.
It's awesome. I got to get it.
Yeah. What are you guys doing lights, or because it's a rental, well, you're a little like, I don't know.
We're definitely going to do a Christmas tree, and where everybody else is super excited about going to the mountains and finding a tree and cutting it down themselves and putting it on their truck and bringing it down.
Minus the mountains.
I am super excited about going to the S-Mart parking lot and getting one for $25 because we grew up our entire lives, like down the street from Christmas tree farms, and did the cut down the Christmas tree our whole life, which is fun. It's very enjoyable. I like it a lot. But in college, I discovered that you could buy an already cut down tree from the grocery store parking lot for half the price. And I was like, yeah, that's how I'm going to do it from now on till I'm rich.
And if you wait until the 23rd, they're free.
I know. That's kind of – there's a part of me that's like, you could wait and then you can get a cheap one. But I won't wait.
You don't want to go that cheap.
Yeah.
Balance, Danielson. Balance.
Yeah. All right. It's true. Enough. I'm already saving money.
Good. Glad to hear that. The other thing I would like to disclose is that I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. And depending on my bonuses here, I may be totally biased. Or not. yes.
It's awesome.
Were we going to ask how something?
How did the disclosures begin with Christmas lights? But it's okay. I'll just go with
That's
it.
That's the new thing. I'm like 3 weeks in where I disclose something else, and then I go on to the official disclosure.
That's right. You're right.
It's a thing.
You know what?
It's a thing.
You're right. Sorry. I was me being slow, not remembering.
No problem, man. 10 hours of sleep over 3 days. That's understandable.
Yeah. So speaking of Instagram, if you want to follow us throughout the week and whatnot, and experience our cool stories and our cool pictures, there are means by which you can do that. One of them is the Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Matthew D. Furlow, and via the Instagram, I am at NextWiggin4. Wiggin.
I'm actually going to cheat, and I'm going to do my first story right now because it's perfect for it.
Okay.
I am at James Furlow on Twitter. And here's what I learned this week. So here's a little PSA, public service announcement, if you will. Did you know that if you start a tweet with an at reply, like say, at James Furlow, the only people who will see that tweet are the people who are friends with both you and me? Or following, I should say, both you and me. Yeah, interesting factoid. Now, here's the other interesting factoid. If you don't start your tweet with the at reply, everybody on your timeline who's following you will see it.
Okay.
So sometimes you might see a tweet where all they have is a period and then the at reply. The reason why they're doing that is so that all of their followers will see it.
Mm.
Otherwise, they won't. So next time you see that on Twitter, you'll be like, oh, I get why they're doing that. So they go, obviously, it's best if you can, kind of naturally do it. Like this guy was making fun of the Patriots. And, so he was like, instead of saying, at Patriots have never won a Super Bowl since they got caught cheating, just saying. Hashtag just saying.
Yeah.
It would be like, go, the at Patriots have never won a Super Bowl since they got cheating. Hashtag just saying. Which I liked on principle in general. And so you're saying that, that first one, which is the at reply, he goes, only people who are following both the Patriots and him will see it. Otherwise, the other way, if you can do a the or a period, he's like, everyone will see it. So,
which, let's be honest, the group of people that follows me and the Patriots is a group of people I don't want listening to me. That was rough. I hope I don't have any Pats fans. What am I kidding?
Yeah,
fans?
So
I don't care.
So if, for example, you wanted to tweet out, say, at James for the great show this week. Put a little period there, and everyone in your timeline will see it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know
so,
that.
There's my PSA factoid. There you go. You learned something, and we're only like 10 minutes in.
That's, yeah.
You can also follow me at jamesferlow.com.
You can now stop listening to the show. I mean, you pretty much got everything that you need from that. That's awesome.
You're welcome, Internet.
my pleasure to serve you. Cool. Also, if you want a whole slew of cool, interesting articles and whatnot, and links and stuff like that, particularly the ones that we reference in this show, there's a cool little website you can go to find everything that we talk about, google.com. Just type it in the search bar what we talked about, and it'll show up first couple of links. If that doesn't work for you, you can go to furloughbros.com. Come on, that was a funny joke, man. Thanks for the laughs.
I was thinking in my head, there have actually been a few occasions where someone has mentioned an article or, you know, some concept, and I'm like, yeah, I've read an article on that, and I'm pretty sure that was in the show. And so I find myself doing, here's a little search tip, doing site:furloughbros.com, and then whatever I think the topic is. Wow, there's a cold breeze coming through. Doing whatever I think the topic is, and then it'll give you just a list of the shows in which we have mentioned that particular article.
That's
on
cool.
It, just on Furlough Bros. So I was thinking in my head, I was like, man, I have searched for specific articles on our show because I know it's all there because we link to every single article, and it's awesome.
You know, it's cool. Any website that uses that has a Google search built into it, because you know how you can like put a search bar for your site and you can use the Google powered one. If you start typing out the web,
we got a search bar, but I don't know if we're Google. Go ahead.
If you start typing out the link and then you hit tab, in Chrome, it says search YouTube video search. So your OmniSearch becomes an OmniSearch for that particular website. And then it actually just forwards you to that website. It doesn't return any Google searches. It's pretty awesome. I use it all the time. Speaking of,
nice.
this is going to be a hackable episode. I already feel it. I'm going to give you all the cool tips and tricks.
I like it.
That's cool. That's very cool. So let's get this show on the road.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about white paper.
Cool.
Or paper white.
Or paper white. So I thought this was kind of an interesting couple of articles because one of them is about what I'm going to buy, and the other one is why there's no possible way it'll work. So first off, the new paper white just got announced. Basically what it's going to be. And I'm super excited because I actually use my Paperwhite a lot, which I'm kind of surprised by to some degree because, to be honest, like, I've got an iPad, an iPhone, and all sorts of different devices, and you'd think you'd have too many to carry around, but I've actually found that I still carry around my Paperwhite and my iPad together, and I use my Paperwhite a lot. But the one downside...
Let me ask you, is that annoying that you have to carry? Wait.
Is that it's not...
Questions. Stop. Can you hear me? Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay. Question...
Yeah, can you not hear me?
No, I can. I feel like my internet's slow, which is annoying, but whatever. I'm paying too much for this slow.
I feel like you are on a huge delay.
I did. I just looked it up. I'm running at about 1.36 megabytes. It's awesome. It's not.
I would turn off my video if I were you.
I should. It's annoying. Like I said, I'm paying way too much for that. But anyways, my question to you was, do you find it annoying that you're having to, carry around all of those those many devices?
I kind of no, I don't.
Because the reason why I'm asking. Go ahead.
The Kindle and the iPad, they stack together pretty well, and neither one of those fit in my pocket. So they sort of, I have to remember to pick up both of those and put those down, and they always kind of live together wherever they're going. Whereas like my iPhone exists in my pocket, so it's just kind of always present with me. And technically, yeah, it has all the content that either one of those have in my pocket if I need it. So it's not, if I forget those for some reasons, I have emergency backup. What were you going
to say? I was going to say that HP is operating off of a premise that eventually that'll get annoying to have to carry all those devices around, and so you'll want just one that can kind of do it all, an omni device, if you will. And you know, and so that's why they're focusing on those convertibles. And you be like, it's not that big of a deal to have to carry all of them. I'm like, oh, interesting. All right. This bet may not work out for HP.
The thing is that it's an engineering problem, dilemma that we're going to run into. The iPad technically is an Omni device. It's got a Kindle built into it. So why do I carry a Kindle around with my Kindle? You know, I'm essentially carrying two Kindles around, one that's a Kindle and one that's a Kindle Plus. And they literally sync together. You know, you can like read along as you're, you know, on both devices when you're in Wi-Fi. They're it's impossible to, you know, really discern between the two, with the one small exception. One of them you can read on outside, and the other you can't. I know, you know, one you can read on in basically any situation, the other you can't. And I find that it's one of those things where the iPad's really, you know, nice to walk around with, and when you're sitting in a room or sitting in a, you know, whether it's kind of a controlled environment, it's fine to read on. But you know, if you're moving at all, in an airplane, things of that nature, it's way better to have the Kindle. And so I find that, you know, and there is something to be said about that long reading period. So this is the whole point of this is to say that you can't fix that with, you know, giving the iPad more features. The only way to fix that is to give it a dual screen capacity, which I'm sure one day we're going to figure out how to do something really cool with screens that allows them to, you know, to look great all the time. But that's not today, that's not tomorrow, that's not, you know, 3 years from now. That's a, you know, nobody's even, that's not even a, hey, we're coming up with these really cool solutions in labs. That's a, you know, we're coming up with these really cool solutions for 2 pixels, and we think it might turn into, you know, a lab grades test in, you know, 5 years. And so I think it's interesting. You know, it goes back to, you know, Steve Jobs. He didn't like the fact that you had a phone, a camera, and a, you know, iPod in your pocket and wanted to put them all together. And then he gave it the internet, and boom, you had the iPhone. Woohoo! You know, that's how he always described it. But it's obviously not a perfect solution. Why did they, you know, if the iPhone was supposed to be your all-in-one, you know, replacement, why did they bring out the iPad? Because there's a physical limitation on input-output, you know, which is to say it's too, you know, it's small. You know, so for the same reason, it's input-output that you carry on the Kindle. So if they can fix that, sure, yeah, I'll buy one device and be super glad to carry it around, and I'll probably pay extra for it, but it's just not the case. So this one's wow, that's weird. It's codenamed Ice One, which is kind of a dumb name. But basically, new Paperwhite, big deal with it, is it's got 300 PPI. So the current one
is... Wow, that's
pretty good. Yeah, the current one is 212, which is barely legible. Let's be honest. I mean, the letters are basically a pixel. But
really?
300 PPI, no, it's actually... It's okay. I find that where it lacks And actually, the closest thing that'll allow me to justify this, selling my old one and buying the new one, is that images do tend to be lacking, which you're gonna say, yeah, but you're reading a book. It's kind of like, by definition, doesn't have pictures, right? But yes, except that I tend to read a lot of textbooks on my programming books and stuff on it, and yeah. That does require, you know, they embed pictures and stuff. And so it would be nice to have a little bit higher resolution. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's not totally necessary, and it's just kind of a cool upgrade, and you're watching your screen technology get better and better, but it's, it's cool. It's exciting. I like it, so I like it.
That is cool. Same price and all that stuff, and it's coming out, or they're working on it?
Excited about it. They're announcing that this is what it's gonna arrive early next year. They haven't given an official launch date or price. It's basically, they're not gonna release the specifics of it all yet. But
okay,
they're like, give it a little time, relax.
Yeah.
So it's basically it's just coming down the pipe. So now what's interesting about that, though, this week they also, The Guardian wrote an article, and basically they took a big old survey, and they said that 62% of 16 to 24-year-olds, so your super high-tech savvy people, said that they prefer traditional books over their digital equivalents, which is not great news for Kindle lovers. Basically what they're saying is ask their preference for physical products versus digital content. Printed books jumped out as the media's most desired in the material form. Ahead of movies, 48%, newspapers and magazines, 47%, CDs, 32%, and video games, 31%. Who between the ages of 16 and 24 wants a CD? I can't believe a third of teenagers still prefer a CD. See, that doesn't even make any sense, because it's not like a book where you get, you know, where it's technically it's an analog solution. These aren't kids saying I'd prefer a record because they sound better. These are kids saying I'd rather a CD. What the heck is that? It's weird.
What are they going to play it on?
Yeah, that's a great, you know what? That's so funny. I hope Lisa doesn't listen to the show this week, because she prefers CDs, because she's got a CD player in her car. I wonder if there's a correlation on that particular number between kids who own older cars and so don't have access to MP3 player inputs, and you know, and that's why that exists. Huh. I don't know. Yeah, seriously. Well, I don't actually know if I could figure out how to play a CD today. If you gave me one, I don't know what I would do with it. What is this?
I would do. I would instantly stick it into my iMac and rip it, and then go, okay, now I can play it.
Right. Yeah, I guess technically I could do that. I do have one of those external drives, the super drives.
Weird. That's interesting.
You know what's really weird about those super drives? 40? It wouldn't work on your iMac.
Really?
No. 62% say they prefer books. Which is not great for the book reader club, or the Kindle reader club, I should say. I think what's funny is I read this and I've been thinking about it, and one of the questions that I wonder is how they worded the question, because, you know, given my preference, I've always said I prefer a book. You know, if I could just sit down and read anything, I'd read a physical book, especially with the programming textbooks that I read. It's nice to be able to flip through and kind of get a sense for how much more, you know, the book I have left, you know, just sort of by picking it up. And I like the look of books. I like having books on a shelf. And the problem is that realistically, I can only carry one or two books with me anywhere I go. And like, there was a time in my life where I'd have like six books just sitting in my car because I have attention deficit disorder, and I read like six books at a time. And by read, I mean like I'll read one for a couple of days a week, then I'll read another one for a couple of days a week, and I'll read another one for a couple of days a week. Then I'll go back to the first one for a couple of days a week, and I won't read anything for a month. Then I'll go back and I'll start a new book, and I just will kind of like keep books with me. And it's basically once I keep kind of become the seventh book, that's when I'm done reading you. And you don't get to come along in the pile anymore. And it became unmanageable, especially for long trips and stuff. Whereas now I get to carry my entire catalog with me everywhere I go, you know, and I wonder if they asked, I wonder how they asked this question, because to me it's like, yeah, a physical book is still superior. It's got a couple of advantages if I'm going to read a single book. But if I'm going to take my entire library with me, I'm gonna pick my Kindle to come with me because it's actually got all my books. And I'd say I'm the kind of person who prefers a printed book versus an e-book. But obviously, I own a Kindle, and if you look at it from a practical perspective, I prefer e-books. I just wonder how they worded that. I wonder if more people are like me, or if there basically is just a wholesale rejection of the digital book revolution. Maybe Steve Jobs was right, but he just didn't.
You know, it's funny. I read 16 to 24 year olds, and then they talk about some of the comments, and like some of them were, "I collect," or "I like the smell," or "I want a full bookshelf," or "Books are status symbols. You can't really see what someone has read on their Kindle." And I'm like, really? A 16-year-old is saying that?
You know, really? I wonder.
A sophomore in high school are like, yeah, I want the status symbol on my bookshelf.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if, like I said, I wonder how they came. And, you know, now I'm wondering if this was even worth talking about as an article. Because that is an interesting thing, but it's like, of book readers, I think that's common. I think for 24-year-olds, it's actually a very common
delineator.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem.
But I know quite a few people that I look down on intelligence wise that find it important to have books. That was me. They find it important to have books for that reason, you know, because they want it to. You know, they want to present themselves as, I'm the sort of person who reads. And, you know, I actually think that's good. I think that's kind of cool. And I think that there is a certain, within a certain community, that is a social status symbol. But it's within people who value, you know, being smart and think being smart is important. And, I think that, and that education is important and that sort of thing. And so I wonder if when they ask those questions, if they either A, just cherry picked a few comments out of the whole thing, or, you know, that kind of fit the narrative they were talking about, or if they were only talking to people, you know, who already indicated that they value reading, you know, was it one of those things where they asked first the question, are you a reader? And if you are a reader, do you prefer ebooks to paper books? And so if you pass the first threshold of are you a reader, that makes you a certain type of person, even at 16. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder. I wish now I wish we could get to the numbers. behind the numbers. But we can't. It's too late. It's gone. So. What's up next?
Here's a new innovation, which I think is interesting. Maybe. It's a water recycling shower.
Yes.
And Adobe, no, let's not download right now, Adobe. this guy came up with this filtration system that essentially you have your shower nozzle. It, you know, showers water upon you, as the name would imply. Then there's a shower tray underneath that collects the water, filters it, and sends it back up to the nozzle. What's interesting about this is he says a 10-minute shower can waste as much as 40 gallons of water.
That's a statistic I've heard my entire life.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's true. And what's interesting about this one is that this one could do 1.5 gallons.
Nice.
Yeah, wasted? Or save you about 95%. Yeah, or used or whatever. Because it does a ton of recycling. What it does is not only does it filter out, you know, the gross stuff that you just showered off, but it also will, it'll barely heat it up, you know, it'll heat it back up a bit because it was already technically heated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it just creates a little closed system here. It's a Swedish industrial designer guy at the University of Lund who has come up with it. So they're working with, surprise, surprise, NASA. To see how this could be used. But I thought it was kind of cool. Just like, and I, you know, I'm obviously like, I'm putting on my landlord hat and I pay water bills. And I'm like, oh, this is an interesting little thing we got here.
Yeah, that is really interesting because it's, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, depending on how expensive the filter is for your filtration system, you know, that would be the big question. I could totally see this saving you money. You know, you know, because obviously you have to build your own, like, you know, you have to have its own pump and stuff. But there's no reason to think that
shows.
Yeah, but it's like, is that, that's obviously like, you know, it, I mean, that probably comes out in the wash, no pun intended. When it comes to the difference between, you know, just not having to reheat the water because it's already, you know, 75% of the way heating. You know, you don't have to. It'll save on, you know, on your heating bill for that same quantity of water. You know, that's interesting. That's a cool concept. I like it. When does it go on sale? When can I go to a what?
Oh, that's a good question. I was going to say they were estimating that every year it could save you about $1,300.
Woo!
You know, in energy and water savings. When does it come out? Let's see here. Right. I don't know. Later.
Later.
They expect to expand to parts within Europe within 2 years.
2 years? That's actually not bad. It's not bad at all.
So I mean, it's, this stuff is coming. And they're doing some, they're starting off with some commercial units, I guess. Which I guess makes sense. Because they would probably go through a ton of water. They've already saved over 100,000 liters.
Nice. That's a lot of liters. I don't have any idea how many liters are in a gallon.
26,000 gallons.
Nice. Four. That's the answer.
Yep, there you go. I just thought that was pretty cool. I was like, oh, that's a cool piece of technology.
That is cool.
I mean, it's like, I like it. I like figuring out interesting ways to save resources that doesn't, you know, it's not saying don't take a shower.
It's not. Take as long a shower as you want. I wonder, the two questions that I have is, number one, how long is it going to, you know, how much water pressure is it going to have? Is it going to be, you know, is it going to be like a full scorching shower, or is it, you know, what's the quality of the shower going to be? Which is, you know, which will be, you know, that'll get better over time, I think. And then the other question is, how much is it going to cost? You know, because it's one of those things where they're telling you that you can save $1,300 a year. So does that mean that the starting price is going to be $2,600 a year because you can justify it? You know, yeah, I guess if they're smart. or is it going to, you know, or is it going to be 5K because it's just expensive and it's cool, but it, you know, you get to save the environment and they're going to go for that market for a couple of years before they try to bring down the price, or are they going to try to price it, you know, aggressively for $500 and, you know, sell a billion of them? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I'm looking forward to it, long and short of it, and I expect to have one in my house one day because I like to do my part to save the world. And also, I could imagine this being legally required in 10 years.
but, yeah, that's true.
So, oh, that's cool. That's cool. So, Apple made a purchase. Did we talk about this last week? I can't remember.
I don't remember either. Do you remember? Let's pretend we did.
Let's pretend we didn't. So, I'm gonna look it up just so I can.
I feel like we did.
I don't think we did. Cool. So, Prime Sense. What do you know about them?
I know that it's part of their technology is what Microsoft uses for the Kinect.
Nice. That's not true anymore. But close. Basically what happened was PrimeSense was the company. They developed a multi-camera 3D sensing technology a while back. And Microsoft's teamed up with them for the original Kinect, back when it had its cool nickname, what do they call it? The Maui? No, it's not it.
I know what you're talking about.
The Dubai? No, it was some cool. Like, it was named after a city, and I thought it was way cooler than the Kinect ever was. But whatever. That's besides the point. The point is that basically these guys helped them develop it, and it's their technology is very reminiscent of the Kinect because the Kinect is based off of it. And if you go to their PrimeSense's website, they have a basically what's a Kinect?
Natal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Natal. Not Nutella, but Natal. I wish they had stuck with that. Whatever. So these guys sell basically, you know, it looks kind of like a webcam for like your computer, but it's a competitive piece of hardware to the Kinect nowadays, because Microsoft has completely moved off of them. They're going with homegrown technology at this point for their Kinect, and they're arguably pushing it much further than these guys ever did, because they're opening up a whole slew of APIs for different, you know, tools that you can use for your Xbox, for your Windows 8 PC. So it's one of those things where they've kind of moved beyond PrimeSense, and they're doing more than they could have with the company, so it has made sense for them to move on. But it did leave them open to be strategically acquired by another company who might want to get into this business. And then along comes Apple Computers of Cupertino. I guess not. Apple Inc. of Cupertino. And they inked a deal that became official over the weekend, I believe it was. Apple bought PrimeSense, which is, you know, like we've been saying, the company that helped develop the Kinect, and they have a Kinect competitor. So the big question has been, the heck is Apple doing with it? Because it's like Apple doesn't usually buy something as a company unless they have a specific reason because they're going to use it. They don't tend to be the type of company, at least my reading of them has been, that they're not the type of company that goes out and just buys stuff to have it, you know, because from a defensive perspective, they normally will buy something, if they buy it defensively, there's at least some part of the technology that they want to incorporate into their stuff. So big question everybody has had was, well, what are they going to do with it? So the two options that people are that are kind of kicking around the rumor mill right now, one of them is that it's going to – that this technology, it's going to land its way into your iPhone. So basically, you know, this is – you're talking about camera technology, and it's spatially aware camera technology. And so essentially they're saying this stuff can watch you while you use your phone. So – if you build it up with, you know, not just like gesture, like, you know, waving your hand over the screen, which everybody, you know, everybody else advertises as something cool that their device can do that your iPhone can't do. Which, you know, that's actually kind of like a legitimate, you know, that's a cool feature in that I think I would use it probably once every other month and would appreciate it when I had it. I don't have it, so it's not as big of a deal, but I wouldn't complain about having it. And so if this found its way into the iPhone, that would be cool. But the other thing that they, you know, they talk about is like being able to track your eyes. Everybody I've talked to who owns the Samsung Galaxy 4, they're like, most of the eye tracking gesture stuff of the phone, it's pretty lame. Doesn't really work. Except pausing videos when you look away. That's awesome and it works great. You're like, oh, okay, that actually does sound kind of cool. So stuff like that, you know, theoretically could get incorporated into the iPhone with a good spatially aware or context aware camera built into your phone. And then obviously the other side of this is to go the Xbox One route, which is to say that they might build it, bake it into a future Apple TV or an Apple television set. As you know, you've got your, you know, they've always talked about the remote as kind of the problem of the TV world. And one of the problems of the TV world. And so how do you interact with the device? And so we've always been saying, well, maybe Siri is the answer. Maybe, your iPhone as a or iPad as a remote is the answer. Or, you know, and now all of a sudden, maybe this is the answer. Maybe the answer becomes, you know, basically Apple builds an Xbox One, you know, equivalent of, you know, gesturing through your stuff on the TV screen. Oh, it's interesting. I don't know.
Do you think... I don't want to say this. Do you think Apple knows what it's doing anymore? You know, and that's more of a criticism on Tim Cook, maybe. But it's like, yeah, they tried one thing. Oh, that's not working. Okay, let's try this other thing. Oh, that's not working. And then I read, and you know, but and even then, it was like, does it even matter when it comes to a television? I was reading this article about Comcast, which I unfortunately don't think I have a link for, but it was talking about why Comcast isn't worried about the Xbox One, and they were essentially saying like Comcast is like they're actually really trying to innovate and come up with cool things so that you really don't care about your Xbox, and they're locking Xbox out of certain other features, you know, like DVRing and video on demand.
Yeah.
They're like, you just can't do that with the Xbox, but you can obviously do it on a Comcast box. And they were like, yeah, and we're working on making the interface better and more attractive so that people like using it. And they're working on their own gesture-based system as well so that you don't have to use a remote. And, you know, and so, like, you know, you hear that and you go, well, geez, sounds like Comcast has kind of figured it out. And they're not going to let them just eat their lunch, and they're not going to just sit around either and wait for them to come up with something that they can no longer compete with. And, you know, and so, you know, so I've got that thought rolling around in my mind. And then at the same time, it's like, you know, here's Apple, and, you know, like you said, we thought they were going to try this style. We thought they were going to try that. You know, is it voice? Is it through the phone? And now they're buying them, and it's like, okay, are they doing this other external gesture thing? Or, you know what I mean? I just, Or was it always in the cards that they were going to use them, and they've actually been working with them for a while, and it just made sense to finally acquire them? You know, because they figured, they found out that Microsoft wasn't using that technology anymore, so they're like, yes, let's pull the trigger. You know what I mean? Oh,
I don't think. My reading of Apple, you know, and even post Steve Jobs Apple, well, I should say this. I have a feeling that Steve Jobs is more impulsive about buying companies than Tim Cook is. I think Tim Cook is more likely to buy a company if they realize there's some aspect of the company that is useful and they want to lock it, and he wants to lock it down from a supply chain management system. We use this product of theirs, we use this process of theirs, we use this whatever of theirs, and we want to lock it down so we know that we'll always have access to it, you know, just for supply chain management purposes. Tim Cook is more likely to buy the company for that reason, which is why I think they've gone on their purchasing spree in the last year, where they've bought in basically a company a month for the last year. And the reason for that has been, these are tools, these are systems, these are products that we use. We want to make sure we always have access to them. And it's not necessarily they're locking other people out so much as they're guaranteeing access. And also kind of locking other people out. But they all are proven technologies. They're technologies they were already using. Because I think Steve Jobs was more likely to say, hey guys, I got an idea. Let's buy PrimeSense. And everybody, like, well, why would we do that? We're not using their technology yet. I have a feeling that, you know, it's like when they bought, what's it called? The one company that did the fingerprint scanners. You know, that was one of those things where they bought that company when it was finally time to go into manufacturing. Once they had already proven that they were going to use the technology, that it was going to come out on the next iPhone, they wanted to lock it down so that they'd have access to it going into production of the 5S. And I get the feeling that, you know, whatever rules they used to determine what their strategic acquisition was, is that they did the same thing here. Now, does that mean I think they have any idea what they're doing from how are you going to actually interface with whatever device we're talking about? Not necessarily. I think that this is a hard nut to crack, and I have a feeling that basically what's going to happen with your Apple TV is every different control style that you can think of, you're going to have access to. It's going to be one of those ones where they're going to advertise it on a single interface option. They're going to say it's a gesture controlled one, and you just wave your hands and stuff works. But you'll also be able to use your iPhone. You'll also be able to talk to it, and you'll be able to, you know, go through all the different you know, things if that's the direction they're going with it. I think it's interesting, if anything, is to say they tend to buy stuff before they need it, but after they've decided that they definitely need it because they're going to manufacture it. So what becomes the question to me is that if this, you know, acquisition follows what they've done in the past, it probably means that they're about to start making something that needs it. For Apple, that could take, you know, 2 years before you actually see the product. But chances are it's only 8 months. My guess would be that whatever this is going to be used for, you'll see before the end of 2015. That's a really long time from now. Before the end of 2014. Oh, my goodness. You know what I just realized?
What?
In about 6 months, it'll have been a year. No, it'll have been a decade since I graduated high school.
Ha.
A decade since I graduated high school. Wow.
So, semi-off topic. I'm just curious.
Sorry. Yeah.
You know, new rumors are swirling around of a giant iPad 13-inch screen. What do you think about
that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't have an article. I've just been reading it and was like, huh, interesting.
I don't know. I think it's a good idea. I think it's going to be a small niche, that niche some would call it, that'll want it. I don't think it's going to be have a huge market, but I don't think it needs to. It depends on what they do with it. When the iPad first came out, what everybody wanted was a Mac-based tablet. If this is a Mac-based tablet, that's pretty cool. That's pretty compelling. And there's a lot of people that sit there and go, it's not hard for them to do from a, manufacturing perspective. You basically put the internals of the Air into the MacBook Air, or not the Air, yeah, the Air. The 11-inch MacBook Air into a 13-inch iPad body, and you have all the space you need for battery and components to have a full-blown, Mac running OS X. Obviously, you'd have to, well, in gesture control would be, you'd have to do something to the operating system, because it's a pointer-based operating system. But a lot of your gestures are already built into, OS X, and work with the trackpad and whatnot. So it's not a crazy idea that you would do that. Now, if all it is a 13-inch iPad running iOS, once again, I think there's a niche for it. I think there's people that will want it. It's just not huge. It's not a gigantic market. But Apple's never, Apple doesn't need a gigantic market. They just need to delight their customers. But I don't know. It'll be that. I think I hope, I keep hoping that they'll make do on the promise of the original iPad and make a Mac pad. But I it's if they don't, I wouldn't be surprised by that either. But I think they're clearly, when it, we I talk we talk about this every once in a while with rumors, they build test runs of all sorts of different things. Every time people talk about the bigger iPhones, they've got four different iPhones that they're going to sell this year. No, they're not. They have four different limited manufacturing runs that they've done. They're going to pick one of them, and it'll probably be the same size one that they always pick. This one, it sounds like it's got a little more legs. They've clearly done a production run. They've tried them out. They're seeing what they can do with them. I don't know. I don't have a real sense of how big the project is, but it does seem bigger than nothing. It does seem like they're doing something, and and they're looking into it pretty seriously. So, oh, cool. I wouldn't. I say this now. I don't think I would need it. I don't think it's something, a product that I'd want to go and buy. Wait until it comes out, and then I'll feel like I need it. Well, what about you?
I don't know. I think a bigger screen could be kind of cool. But I'm married to an artist who, is interested in the bigger screen just in general. There's a part of me that's like, I think about this podcast and I keep trying to figure out ways that I could do it fully on an iPad. Just 'cause I think that would be cool. And I can't figure it out yet. It's like the little things. Okay, fine. We record this thing over Google Plus. How do I download it? And it automatically uploads it to YouTube, or it's not really upload, or just captures it via YouTube, however you want to think about it. And then I found a website that all I got to do is give it the YouTube link, and it will strip out the audio for me, which I'm like, oh, that's cool. But then it's like, okay, somehow I got to get this audio into GarageBand for the iPad. And everything I've read, they're like, you can't do it. It's the app doesn't have that option in it. So I'm like, great. So it's like, man, I would love to do that, but I can't. Obviously the multitasking of having the video and then like looking up articles wouldn't work. So, you know, so again, I just think about something like this podcast, which isn't terribly difficult to process and do all that stuff. But yeah, on an iPad, it's just not possible. You just wouldn't do it.
Well, it goes back to when I first came in, I asked them how to do some, I can't remember what it was, but something to do with the internet, and the sales dude just kind of looked at me and seriously said, "It's not designed to do that. Don't."
Didn't you want to look at the source code of a web page or something?
Oh yeah. He goes, "That's not what the iPad's for." What?
Yeah, and so so I sat there and it was like, you know, if they made a bigger one, and like you said, it was closer to Mac OS as opposed to iOS.
Yeah.
Like, well, all right, I might be actually interested in that, and some of my other workflow could move over there. It's just not the case yet, which is part of the reason why I don't pull the trigger. But you know, whatever. I think it could be neat.
Yeah, and
prices, obviously.
This is a good transitional period. So I'm just gonna take it and run with it. But you know, we've talked about our complaints of what's it called of Windows 8 have not been the concept of a computer and a tablet at all. I mean, that's I think that's compelling. It's just their particular execution of it has been a little bit befuddling. But in concept, no, I think it's a good idea, and I think it's the direction we're going, and it becomes, you know, ultimately, I do think that something more akin to the mobile Linux operating system, the mobile Ubuntu is your longest term solution to all this, where there's actually two different interfaces that exist on the same device. There's the interface for your phone, which is icon, app based and flicking and everything, and then you plug it into a HDMI cable, and all of a sudden it's a full blown Ubuntu, desktop. I think that has more potential than, as your kind of long-term solution to all of this, but with smart screens everywhere. But, Microsoft has come up with their solution to this in the all-in-one, and it has some compelling use cases. I think on this podcast, the idea of, most artists that I've read have said that the stylus, on your Surface tablets makes it, better than the iPad in a lot of ways for drawing, that's cool. And, for certain types of, obviously it'd be easier to process the podcast on a Surface tablet than it would be an iPad, in that it'd be actually possible. Windows has got a couple of advantages there. That being said, one of their execs this week came out and made kind of a strong statement. Let me see if I can get the quote really quick. We have the Windows Phone OS, we have Windows RT, and we have full Windows. We're not going to have three, is what Larson Green, who is Executive Vice President of Devices and Studios at Microsoft, so this is a lady who actually knows what she's talking about. She's got sort of an important new position. This isn't just some nobody, shooting their mouth off. And she said, this is our first go at creating a more closed turnkey experience. More akin to what the iPad is. And she said, yeah, but now we've got three operating systems and we're not going to have three. So everybody's like, okay, Microsoft's going to kill RT. Awesome. That's nice job, Microsoft. obviously the phone OS is going to survive because they just bought Nokia to carry that one on. And Windows 8 is probably that would be a twist that I would not have seen coming if they were to get rid of full Windows. You know what? It's not worth it, man. but yeah, so Windows RT is on its way out. So I can't remember. HP, do they sell any Windows RT stuff?
Not that I know of. Well, it says in the article that it's only Microsoft and Nokia that make Windows RT devices. So
right.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, that's probably. Man, that drives me crazy. That just drives me crazy. It's the most exciting thing that they've done with Windows from a computer science, hardware design perspective in decades. And they could not have fumbled it more by selling it on systems that were so, you know, they had a price point. And the problem is that this is such a marketing thing. It was, they had a well-engineered product. And then the marketing guys took over and said, we can't market it at this high of a price. So what they said was, we're going to put it at this price, and that's going to give us a balance between the power we want and the cheapness of the device. But they made it too cheap. They made the price point too low to be able to put in enough RAM, really and truly, and enough processing power into it to run the operating system. So either the operating system was too big, or the tablets were too cheap, and so they didn't run very well. And because they didn't run very well, they didn't sell very well, which means they had to lower the price even more just to get rid of their get rid of their supply. And now they're setting the expectations of it being an even cheaper device, and it just it got away from them real quickly because the marketers took over. And so like the one chance that we actually had to see a cool new life for Windows got completely crushed. Oh, it drives me nuts. Drives me crazy.
It's the way it is, man.
Yeah. How do we fix Microsoft?
Well, they're gonna get a new CEO sometime in here.
Yeah.
And they'll make a difference. They'll shake things up.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. Good. I mean, they know it. They know it, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's necessary. Because this is just... I can't... that's just one of those, like... It just drives me crazy. You had potential here, Microsoft. And you're just throwing it away. You just don't care. Yeah.
Speaking of another company that has a ton of potential and just threw it away, but is now trying to recapture that light, is Yahoo.
Yahoo.
Their craziness is continuing. Do you know who Katie Couric is?
Do I know who Katie Couric is? Believe it or not, James, I do. She talks to us like we're 5-year-olds. No, is she? Yeah, she's the one.
All right. She now works for Yahoo.
Really?
Yeah.
What did she do for Yahoo?
That coming.
I did not see that coming.
She is the new face of Yahoo News, apparently. She will be leading a growing team of correspondents at Yahoo News who will cover the world's most interesting stories and newsmakers.
Now, that is interesting. That is an interesting development. One that I did not see coming.
Yeah, she's, Marissa Mayer said that news is a definitive daily habit for our users, and Katie will work with our talented editorial team to pioneer a new chapter of digital journalism.
Yeah, that's cool. That's like Bezos buying, that one newspaper that he bought.
The Washington Post.
The Post. That's cool.
So, I I immediately had like, you know, I don't know, visions of what does this look like? Because that's part of the other deal, right? They're like, she's leading it, and people are like, well, okay, well, what does that mean? Like, well, yeah. We don't know yet, but it's going to be awesome. And, you know, so I'm like, all right, what could that look like? I could see one potential thing where it's like, yeah, they've got the news items for the day sitting on the Yahoo homepage, and Katie Kirk kind of gets to be the your guide, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the chief editor of, okay, what, you know, what deserves to be up there. But then I could also totally see where there's a video that she does, you know, once or twice a day or something, where, you know, she kind of gives you the news and the highlights, and, you know, and so you visit Yahoo, you click it, and you go, oh, cool, I got my 30-second news from Miss Couric.
Yeah.
Or something, I don't know. You know, so like a quick video of her, and like, all right, cool, I got my news. And, you know, and she leads you to other stories and sites within Yahoo, you know, down that rabbit hole of news, potentially. I don't know.
Yeah. That it'll be interesting to see. Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see what they do with her, because, you know, obviously there's some potential here, and everybody can see it. You know, we're going a certain direction with the news, and you know, it's going to have to evolve. And Yahoo News that's a big reason that a lot of people who use Yahoo use it. I mean, Yahoo News is huge. It's a huge anchor of their website. And so it sounds like they've made some strategic purchases. They try to expand what they're doing. They tried to, you know, make their mail better. It sounds like they failed miserably at that, but they're trying.
Yeah, happens.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that you're just like, what is going on with that? Like, did you read? I read an article. I guess they had this like big internal document where one of their people was like, you know, we've been trying to get like everybody over to using the new Yahoo Mail instead of Exchange, and it's not working. So y'all need to like hurry on up. And everybody's in Yahoo's like, it's not working because we don't like the new Mail app. Like, but you know, it's one of those things where they're trying all these different things, and this one makes sense to do. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, I just could see the temptation to be with Yahoo News. It's not broke, don't fix it. It's the anchor of the website, so just kind of keep it going. But at the same time, you know, if you don't disrupt yourself, somebody else is going to disrupt you. And, you know, Amazon is a huge threat because, you know, Bezos is clearly trying to shake something up, and they have the bandwidth to be able to deliver in a way that really, you know, Yahoo couldn't go, you know, that they can deliver on their news, you know, just as well as Yahoo does. And right now, you know, they're not doing anything that's competitive to Yahoo, but you could see if they built up a news system, you know, and kind of housed it around the Washington Post and the guys that work for them, that could be a really compelling competitive news system. When you're talking about, you got your Amazon News app or your Washington Post app and your Yahoo News app sitting on your phone, and you're going to go to one of your two apps when the, you know, alert comes up, you know, if you're going to your Amazon one, that's a bad deal for Yahoo. So I don't know. It's interesting. I can see why it's important for them to quote unquote disrupt themselves and shake things up. And hopefully, unlike their mail app, people will respond well to this. I think people hate change just in general. And the people who hate change, you know, they are a loud and annoying group. It's like every time Facebook changes stuff and people complain, I want the old Facebook back. You know, you know what I want? I want it to go back to thefacebook.com, but you don't see me getting what I want, okay? What's great about that is that you can still type into the Facebook and it'll take you to it. I got what I wanted. I think that they are going to change stuff. It is going to upset people a lot. But I think in the long run, it's going to be better for the company, you know? Or
What's
they.
also interesting about this is she's kind of the third piece that's been put into it. Yahoo has also recently hired David Pogue, the New York Times tech reviewer.
Yeah,
Pogue's
a big deal.
Yeah. And Ryan Seacrest for
I don't under, I don't I don't I don't see Seacrest, Pogue,
again,
and Kerr
it's,
on the
you
same
know, we're
level,
talking
but.
Big names, you know, I guess. Or celebrity.
I get why they went with Seacrest, and that just it's so contrite, but you know.
Yeah, whatever. I guess all I'm trying to point out is, you know, they're genuinely trying to put together this cast of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Contrived.
Again, Yahoo doing
not
some
contrived.
Crazy stuff. We really don't know what, but you know, we're excited to see it in 5-10 years.
It's true.
Assuming she lasts that long.
Yeah.
Which everyone keeps saying, we don't know what she's doing, but we trust her.
Yeah.
So.
You know what? I trust
make it happen.
You.
Yeah, I bet.
Cool. So.
How are we doing? How are you feeling? Are you totally tired? Are you amped? Or
I could go for another half hour.
Okay.
When do we start?
I don't know.
9:30.
9:25.
Yeah, let's go for another. Let's go for another hour. Yeah. No, let's go till 11. You know, do a couple of these articles. So this is kind of a cool one. This is actually really cool technology, and I really want to use it. And, this is important to me because this is what I want. I wanted it for a while, and I've been trying to figure out how to do it. But I want to make my own digital picture frame. I want a big one. I want to take a 27-inch monitor. I want to pop the frame off of it. And I don't want to embed that in a large picture frame. I want like a big one. I want an impressive one. But the thing is that I don't just want to do photos. I want to do looping GIFs. Have you ever seen these before?
I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe.
So what they are is they're generally these quote unquote perfectly looped GIFs. And so, you know, they're generally relatively short.
To a digital photo, a short video animation.
Go ahead.
What are you doing?
I was looking at the video of a GIF or something.
So basically what happens is there's these, like, a lot of times they're described as like cinematic GIFs, but it'll be something where there's movement, there's action, but it always loops back perfectly, so you don't know where the cut is, and so they just kind of go on forever. And
like some of those fireplace fires.
Yeah, exactly.
Ideally.
Some of them I'm seeing like rainy streets where like there's not cars driving by. It's just like a portrait of a street with rain coming down, and the rain just loops perfectly, or like water lapping on a shore, stuff like that. And they're very cool, but they're notoriously difficult to make. This team at Microsoft came out with this awesome new utility that they've been working on and developing, and they basically released this utility with sort of like, you know, to call it in beta phase is probably unfair. It basically said, we built this really cool technology, and then we put a little user interface on it so that somebody who knows what they're doing could use it. But basically what it does is they sit there and said, you know, you put in a chunk of video, and then, you know, that you want to loop. And basically what happens is, like, in the past, what you would have to do is you'd have to basically take an image or take a chunk of video, and you have to break it into by hands. You would tell the computer, all the different elements of how they all kind of moved, and then you would you basically have the computer create these composite layers of all the different elements of it, and then kind of you have to like stitch them together, and it was a difficult process, and it had to be a really specific type of video and kind of how you filmed it, because you know you didn't want too many moving elements, and it was hard to get everything timed. And basically, they were like, "We're having the computer do all of that calculations for us." Basically, you take a short clip, and then it'll break out all the different elements for you. And so the example that they had a couple of different examples, but it was like they have this like beach scene with all these trees like blowing in the wind and stuff, and so they break it down. They're like, there are some things that are static and those are one color, that's like your background. There are some things that are moving like the tree quickly, like the tree leaves, and there's some things that are moving at different paces. And so they break all these different elements into their all these different pixel groups into their different elements. And then what they said is they're like, so, and basically what we find is that each of these different elements, they have an ideal kind of loop that they can go through. They all return to about all the different speeds, and so, or their different place at some point. And so what we do is we give each of those different elements their own loop cycle, and then we give it the entire thing a loop so that they all kind of loop together. They all end up, you know, if one thing loops twice every 30 seconds and the other one loops seven times every second, well, we'll put two loops to the one and seven, we'll find the lowest common denominator, essentially, of all of the different looping structures in it, and then we put it all together, and at the end of the day, it stitches together into a seamless loop. And you're like, what? That is so awesome. And so they can do these really complex dynamic scenes. And then, and they said, you know, there are problems with it because you're talking about automatically removing backgrounds and stuff. So there, sometimes if there's a really dramatic movement, or things that are just not loopable, like, you know, some car, you know, like cars on a freeway, because things never loop back, you know, you don't actually return. It can generate some weird artifacts, but they're like, but it works pretty well for, you know, for what it is. And they said, and what the other cool part about it is because the scene has all these different loops with all these different, you know, zones that are going on, that if you want, you can create these really cool dynamic things where it's like, they have one scene where it's like, they have like towels that are hung on ropes that are, you know, for drying, and the towels are all blowing in the wind, and they're like, basically what you can do if you want is you can have different elements be looping, and then some elements you can just pause. So you can have these like, you can have these portraits that parts of it are static and parts of it are dynamic. So like, for example, you could do something where it would be like, you know, you could have like cars driving down a rainy road. You could pause the cars, but have the rain be dynamic. So it would just be the cars would all be paused in time, but the rain would be coming down. You're like, oh, that's so cool.
Be cool.
Yeah. So it's a, I don't know. It's just kind of, it's one of those products where I was like, man, this like totally makes me want to build my portrait again. Figure out how to do this, but they, cause they released this stuff, but, yeah, the reason I bring this up is because every time I bring up Microsoft, I normally get mad at them for doing something wrong. And this is one of those cases where it's just doing something awesome. This is the part of Microsoft that I love. This is cool technology. And, you know, they let somebody, you know, one of their computer scientists say, hey, go do something cool. And they did something cool, and they're just, they can't figure out a package into a sellable product, so they're just releasing it, you know. Or at least the technology is probably going to get embedded somewhere at some point. You know, in the next couple of years, you'll see it as a part of a bigger utility. But for now, they're just releasing it as this. Or they got down to the end of the road and they realized it wouldn't work as part of a bigger utility because there's just too many artifacts. But they had already done all this work, so they might as well, you know, give it away. But it's very cool. Very cool. I like it.
That is cool. I like it, too. Here's some insider baseball for you.
Cool.
One of the publications I like to follow is called Pando Daily. It was started by Sarah Lacey, who quit TechCrunch, another large tech website, after she was passed up for editor-in-chief or something like that. So she started up Pando Daily. At the same time, there was another company called NSFW Corp that was started up by a guy named Paul Carr, who I liked reading his stuff because he was always pretty crazy over the top. And it was funny. For the longest time, I actually thought that Paul Carr and Sarah Lacey dated because they would do these videos together and they just seemed to get along really well.
Oh, yeah.
And had all these stories. And so I was like, man, I'm pretty sure they are. And then I found out that Sarah Lacey was actually married and like she had a kid and it wasn't with Paul. And so I was like, oh, all right. Never mind.
Yeah.
They're just good friends. So anyways, they both worked for TechCrunch and both ended up leaving when they went through their whole fiasco thing. Again, insider baseball. And so she started up Pando Daily, which is like a pretty much a competitor to TechCrunch and like The Verge, except they're not necessarily chasing the everyday, every hour newsy stories, but more going for the longer form, you know, journalism. Let's talk about what's, you know, some of the implications behind what's happening. We use them for source material in a podcast a lot, or at least I do.
Yeah.
And then they also have a ticker that, you know, they pull from other websites saying, hey, here's what was said around the web. Think of it as a tech meme type of thing.
Yeah.
So they have that. So Paul Carr started up a company, again, NSFW Corp, that was more political in nature, more long-form journalism. It had a paywall, so it required a subscription. And they even got into the print world stuff. And what was super interesting about what he did was he wrote everything. He was like, here's how we're making it happen. Here's how much we're paying our guys to do stuff. Here's our numbers and whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, which was interesting. And you're like, all right, man, he's kind of like, he's putting it all out there.
Yeah.
And his company did struggle. And like a few weeks ago, he wrote a blog post that was like, yeah, so we're running into some problems. We need some funding. Just going to put it out there that we need it. He's like, I think it's still fundamentally a good model. He's like, we just, you know, issues, whatever.
Yeah.
So
you have
also
some money that you want to give us, we'll appreciate it, is what I'm saying.
yeah. And he goes, and I guess at the same time, he was like, we're gonna continue to do political stuff, but we're going to start doing it on a, you know, technology-bent focus. And then Pando Daily was like, you know, we're finding that we're expanding into more political and technology-based things. And so, like, wait a second, we're writing about the same stuff, and we're friends?
Yeah.
So Pando Daily ended up buying NSFW Corp, and they're now their new name will just be Pando.com. So that's cool, which means they finally were able to get enough money together to buy that URL, is my guess.
Yeah, probably.
How a lot of that stuff works, you know, the Facebook.
Yeah.
Now we can afford just Facebook. Oh, good. So yeah, just kind of cool. And again, something where when I first found out they were starting two companies and his was behind a paywall, I was like, oh man.
Yeah. That's I guess I won't be getting their information.
Yeah, so now I do. And
cool.
So for me, the interesting part about all this, besides the fact that I kind of like got to experience the drama real time, is, you know, they are trying to answer the question, what does journalism look like today in an ever-shifting world and one where newspapers are dying? And so she's like, yeah, we're keeping the print edition. She's like, that's cool. And it'll essentially be highlights of the best Pando articles.
Huh.
To which I'm like, so I'm going to pay $83 a year to get a quarterly printed thing that is just a rehash of what I've already read? Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't fully get it, but, you know, let them go. They're experimenting and having fun with it. So it's just, it's interesting. You know, they're trying to figure out how to make this work. I think Paul was pretty good at proving that, yeah, even if you have great writers and good content, the paywall and the subscriber thing doesn't seem to work really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, which I think has bad implications for others. And apparently Pando's doing really well financially and with readers and stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah.
They're going to try merging. We'll see how it works. Keep your eyes open.
Yeah, that's cool. That'll be interesting to watch. Especially because it actually kind of affects us in this show.
We don't actually do any reporting ourselves. We just we bum off of other people's work.
Yeah, we're op-eds. That's what we call it. Opinion editors, editorials, and yeah. So, did you see the new Microsoft commercial that they came out with?
No.
So Microsoft came out with this new ad. They hired the guys, the stars of Pawn Shops from the Discovery
Channel. Oh, I heard about that.
You ever watch those guys? You ever watch that show?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. It's a good show.
Yeah. It's pretty funny with, what's his name? Chumley? Is that the
yeah,
Chumley kid's name? the funny one. He's basically Mikey from Orange County Choppers, but yep. In the pawn shop. So basically what they do, the whole premise of this ad is this woman comes in, or, you know, it's set up just like an episode of Pawn Shops, where if you haven't seen Pawn Shops, what are you doing with your life? Stop watching Duck Dynasty and go watch Pawn
it's
Shops
Pawn
for
Stars.
An hour. Pawn Stars? That's right. Jeez. I hate when I do
They're based
like
in
that.
Las Vegas. Yeah, it's interesting.
So, yeah, basically, the premise is person comes up and they film them saying what their product, what they're trying to pawn, how much they're going to get paid for it. Then they go in, they talk to the shop owners, they go through the whole, like, they talk about it, they get the history of it, then they go into the negotiating, and then they film the person at the end outside the store kind of, like, redoing their, like, you know, what was your experience? So that's the basic – that's the formula of the show. So this one starts with this lady. She walks in. She's standing out in front of the store, and she goes, so today my grandma or my mom or somebody got me a Chromebook laptop, and I'm trying to sell it so that I can go to Hollywood is what I'm trying to do. And, so we'll see what we can do today. And she goes in, and then they've got the father and the son, the two guys that like moan, the older one, the oldest father, and the grandfather and the father, not this, whatever, it doesn't matter. Point is, basically, they take it and they rip it apart. They're just like, this thing is like useless. Like, it's not even a real laptop because it can't run any, like, you know, any apps. And if you're not connected to the internet, it's completely useless. Like, this thing's like basically a brick. And they're like, yeah, not to mention that, like, Google steals all your personal information so they can sell you advertising and stuff. And, like, they just ripping on the Chromebook. And then they eventually tell her that they can't buy it because it's not worth anything.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty brutal. And everybody, oh, my gosh. Everybody's getting, like, up in arms about the fact that, like, you know, that, you know, Microsoft, you're going to get down on, like, you know, privacy and whatnot. You know, it's obviously, like, you've realized this is just a meme you can ride, that Google's in trouble for privacy. So you're like, yeah, they are really bad at privacy. Don't buy their stuff, buy ours instead. but it's, I don't know, it was funny. I thought, I sat there and I was kind of like, you know, that's the reason I don't own a Chromebook. Like, these aren't ridiculous criticisms. They're not entirely unfair. I mean, they're very cheap pieces of hardware. If they had compelling software, there'd be a lot more that were bought. The problem is that the software is not very good because all it is a browser. Is it an interesting computer science project? Yes. Is it a good foundation for future technologies? Yes. Is it maybe the future? Maybe. I'm not willing to write it out. Does it make any sense as a purchase right now? Not really. And so I sit there and I go I thought the reaction to it was interesting and that people seemed to be really bent out of shape about it. But you're like, but you didn't buy a Chromebook for the exact reason that Microsoft's telling you to not buy a Chromebook. Are you serious? Windows is a better operating system. Why are we complaining about this? They're not wrong. They're basically just saying, you're at $180, you're spending too much money, okay? Don't go that cheap. Spend an extra $150 and get an actual laptop.
That, by the way, can still do everything that does.
Exactly, yeah. It runs the full Chrome operating system when you download the Chrome browser. So, it's I don't know. I thought it was fine as a commercial. And honestly, as far as a lot of they're totally onto this Scroogle kick, which I think is just kind of dumb. I think somebody thinks that's super clever, and it's not something I'm ever going to hashtag Microsoft. It is what's the word I'm looking for? It's just too clever. It's not going to happen, Google or Microsoft. But as far as their, Microsoft is bad for you or Google is bad for you commercials go, I thought this is a pretty good one. They clearly decided to throw some real money behind it, and I'm glad that the female actor they got did not do that great of a job, but I thought that the Pawn Star guys did a good job of acting, which I think is a bigger commentary on the nature of their show than anything. They are clearly just really talented actors who have a side job as a pawn shop owners. But it's, I don't know. I'm just glad to see Microsoft coming out with commercials that don't make me cringe the entire time. it's funny enough. But go to furloughbros.com if you want to see the ad. It's decent.
Yeah, it'll be there.
Yeah. So, good news this last month for the iPhone 5S/C. If you are not an American and and you're into Apple, so. Two countries where there's a couple of countries that everybody kind of looks at as your big indicators of where things are moving. The United phone wise, United States, the UK, yep. France, China, India, and Japan. Japan's interesting because just culturally as a tech bubble, they're just interesting to watch. They buy a ton of phones, but they're not the biggest market. They're just interesting. UK and France kind of go together because they make up a huge portion of your European sales of smartphones. So they're important for your Europe region. America, obviously, we buy an unbelievable number of phones. And then China and India are important because it's the biggest markets in the world. And there are a huge number of people there, and they're buying phones like crazy. So everybody likes to look at those countries. So I'm going to talk about two of those in particular. India, I think, is an exciting one for Apple because where China is a communist country, and they've got all sorts of weird, things that they're doing to try to promote their own products and, keeping Google out. And, we talk about their issues with them all the time. But India's got a huge amount of growth that they can still do as a country for companies like China, and they are very price conscious, but they're not nearly as picky as China. So long and short of this is, in the last month, really, pretty much since the iPhone 5S and C have come out, the latest generation of the iPhone is outselling the Galaxy S4 in India. Now, cheap phones like the Nokia 6 series, where they're barely, I don't even think they're running Windows, but your really cheap smartphones are selling like crazy. They're destroying your high-end phones. But in the high-end market, you know, for the people in India that can't afford the $600 phone, they're buying iPhones. That's their preference, which is, you know, which Apple has always, you know, has always said they want to be a premium phone maker. And obviously they stuck with that by pricing the 5C the way that they did. But, you know, once again, in markets like America, like Europe, where you see people, when people are given options, and what they said was really interesting about this is that in countries where two-year contracts are normal and a subsidy almost always comes with a two-year contract, which brings all of your really high-end smartphones kind of pretty close to parity. They're all cheap enough where they're all effectively the same price. They find that the iPhone's doing incredibly well. It's markets where there is no two-year contract, so there is no subsidy, that you're getting hurt. Well, in India, that they're sitting there going for the high-end phones where, you know, the iPhone in general can't compete in India because it's just too expensive. But in the market that it is competing in, it's doing very well. That being said, Japan is a two-year contract country. Pretty much all your different carriers everybody does do two-year contracts, which means they do subsidized phones. So for October, the big Docomo, which is the final, there was only one carrier that wasn't carrying the iPhone. They just signed a contract with Apple earlier this year. So Docomo, the first batch of iPhones that they've had were the 5S and the 5C. And so according to Kantar World Panel, 76% of new smartphones sold in October were iPhones, including 61% on Docomo. Holy cow. handily won victory on Apple's parts. 76% of smartphones. And what's crazy is that it's like, you know, Japan is notoriously nationalistic when it comes to their tech companies. Like, they don't buy Xboxes there. Like, you can't sell an Xbox to save your life because y'all buy Sonys, you buy PlayStations, you buy Nintendos, you buy, you know, homegrown technology. There's no reason to buy somebody else in some other countries. So this is a huge, radical cultural shift for how they view their tech companies and how they view technology, on top of the fact that they're selling a huge number of phones in Japan. You know, it's great news for Apple, but, man, that is fascinating. I don't even know what it means. You know, obviously, like I said, it's not the biggest market in the world, not even close, but it's just an interesting one to watch because their heritage of being a gigantic, you know, mover in the tech, you know, world as the leading lights for quite a few years. But they just culturally, they have some unique aspects to them that makes them especially fun to watch for when foreigners start to do well there. And one of these foreign companies is doing incredibly well there. I think part of the reason is that I think it's HTC's Japanese, I think. But if one of your Japanese phone companies were doing well with Android at all, I think it would be a different case. But I think the fact that they have to choose between Cupertino and Korea for whether they want to buy their smartphones. And part of the reason that Cupertino is doing so well is that we're not Korea. I just lumped myself in with Apple. That's awesome. But, you know, and I realize that that's not a particularly PC outlook on racial views in the greater Asia, but you know, I think it's true that they are forced to make a cultural choice, to change their culture of what technology they believe in and what technology they want to invest in, because they can't invest in a Japanese company. I think if they had a legitimate option, they would, but they don't. And so, given the choice between Korea and America, they chose America as a culture. So, I don't know. Good news for Apple.
Fair enough. Yeah, they're doing good. Final story here.
Okay.
I just feel like mentioning it. We'll see how well that works out. Amazon, I don't know, it's like today or yesterday or something, announced Amazon Prime Air.
Yeah.
Well, I think they actually announced it a while ago, and they actually finally put out a video to officially talk about it. but it's the goal is a new delivery system to get packages to customers within 30 minutes using unmanned aerial vehicles.
Oh, baby.
Boom. Yeah, which if you've downloaded the new Cities of Tomorrow expansion pack from SimCity, they actually have this option where you have these like little drones that'll fly all around delivering goods to customers, thus reducing your traffic, which is nice. For video game, and Amazon's bringing that to the real world, where that's it's awesome. Those what do they call this? The AR, you know, it's those little helicopters with the four engines that can fly around.
Yeah, quadcopters.
And, quadcopters. Thank you. So they're using those, apparently, and they're like, yeah, we're making this. We're just waiting for the necessary FAA rules and regulations. Because, you know, the FAA, I'm kind of imagining the FAA is like, you what?
Yeah.
They're like, from a technology point of view, like, we're ready to enter the commercial operations as soon as the necessary regulations are in place. And I said, and the FAA is working on them for unmanned aerial vehicles. And then they're like, so one day we'll see a fleet of Prime Air vehicles in the sky? Like, yes. One day, Prime Air vehicles will be as normal as seeing mail trucks on the road today.
I'll be honest. I would sign up for a Prime account to have them deliver packages that way.
So, and they're talking about this could be as early as 2015 that they're
awesome.
Can start going. Awesome. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, and again, it's really up to the FAA to FAA to kind of tell them what they can and can't do. Pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I have a little concept video.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's great about this is that one nice part about our federal government is basically what's going to happen is Amazon's going to write their legislation or the write the documentation for them, and the FAA just has to sign off on it. Amazon will be able to do whatever the heck they want to do. within the guidelines of what's safe, I'm sure. I get the feeling that it's just a matter of time, and that's awesome. That's super cool.
Pretty fun.
You know, and it's funny, Google and Google Shopping, they have this app it was an iAd. I almost never click on iAds except on accident. I never click on ads in general except on accident. But this one I clicked on purpose. Well, no, I clicked on it in an accident, realized what it was, and then had to click on it again after I closed it to bring it back. But basically what it was like a delivery thing for Google where they're like, yeah, we'll deliver today anything you want. and they have all sorts of crazy shopping stuff with like Target and stuff. You know, everybody's been working on delivery stuff like that. You know, they, you know, different computer. I'm like, Google's got one. Okay, I want to try this out. And then I was looking at it. It's only the Silicon Valley. It's the only area that you can get it, like San Francisco, you know, Silicon Valley. I was like, this is awesome. And then I was like looking. I was like, I got to find something to buy. And they ask you, like, to put in your address so they can, you know, make sure they deliver it to you. So I could put in my address, and I'm just outside of their region.
That hurts.
So yeah, I was like, maybe I can have it delivered to one of my friends who do live in the region. And then I realized that's stupid. Like, if I have to go and pick it up from the store, I should just go pick it up from the, you know, like, what the heck? It doesn't even make sense. But it's a cool idea. I just want a bigger territory. So what's exciting about this is I'm sure the territory will be much bigger and will actually be, you know, something that I will be able to get. So, like I said, you know, every time I order something off of Amazon, I always debate whether or not I want to get a Prime account. But Amazon, I'm telling you, this one will probably put me over the edge. I'll do it. I'll get on the bandwagon.
And again, I think it's just another example of how their, you know, automated air travel is going to happen before automated car travel does.
Yeah.
Just because there's less barriers in the sky. You know, they're talking about 2 years from now.
Yeah. So this is. I realize that we're dragging the show on now. But my last thought is Holland. Finland, one of those countries, electric cars outsold internal combustion engine cars this last month.
Wow.
And guess which electric car they're buying almost exclusively?
The Leaf.
Yep, no. Teslas. Crazy. And everybody was like, what the heck? What happened there? Like, that's awesome, but how does that, like, you know, come to be?
Yeah.
I guess basically what they're like is that they tax the heck out of internal combustion engines. Anything that produces CO2, there's like a progressive tax where the more it produces, the more they tax it. And effectively, wow, what ended up happening, because there's no tax on the Tesla, Teslas are cheaper. So not only do you have the huge swag factor of the amazing luxury car that is the Tesla Model S, but it's actually cheaper than internal combustion engine cars. That's awesome. So hopefully that doesn't mean that Tesla's going to pick up shop and go overseas, because that's where everybody's buying their cars. But pretty exciting. It is good news for Tesla as a company and the future of electric car, because at least there's one country that'll finance the whole project for the rest of us.
Yeah.
So
I saw a couple of Teslas driving around in the Bay Area last week, and they look cool. I'll admit
it. Very, very cool. Yeah, but all of that to say that, you know, Elon Musk wants your Tesla to be able to drive 90% of the time for you in 3 years, and yeah, clearly the whole, you know, planes will fly for you first. And, you know, I think cars will follow relatively quickly behind, but the automated travel revolution is in full swing in the air. And, yeah, I think it'll
it's be pretty cool.
Completed way before that happens with cars. But I think when we start seeing – I think that this is an important step in people becoming more comfortable with cars driving for you. You know, because you see these little aerial drones all over the place, and you'll shrug your shoulders, and after a while, you know, you go, you know, they almost never crash into each other. It's pretty, you know, okay, cool. I'm happy then. So, cool. Very cool. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, cool. A lot of good stories. A lot of good stuff. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my, I don't know, what are you? My tryptophan brother. Because you're tired. That's why I said that.
Yeah.
So, he is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.
Thank you.